You're listening to SupDoc,
a show where we talk to interesting people, writers, comedians, and filmmakers about documentaries that they have strong opinions about. I'm George Chen.
And I'm Paco Romain.
Today we're going to be talking about the 2002 film Comedian, ostensibly a Jerry Seinfeld documentary, really also an Orny Adams documentary, and we really dig into Orny Adams in this whole interview.
And we dig in it with comedian and showrunner and writer Ivan Hernandez.
You're our pod mentor. You're telling us some podcasting.
I was dropping some pod knowledge.
Yeah, you were.
You should look, I feel like kind of a pod fraud because I don't do any of the pod work.
A fraudcaster. Yeah. Yeah, you were telling us about like, oh yeah, we should introduce you. So we just did.
Yeah.
And I just referred to it. So that kind of eliminated the fact that that was an off mic thing because now it's on mic. Okay.
Wait. Okay. All right.
I went meta back into.
He did.
I did.
Look, I'm like a goldfish. The time before the recording was happening doesn't exist to me.
We just learned about your huge... Oh, well, we can't talk about that on the air. All right. That's something... If you... Never mind. Okay. All
my
of
huge
that.
Huge what? Wait, what?
Wait, let's...
you were just on Doug Benson's show.
That's, oh, yes. Oh, no, oh, that. My gigantic...
I can talk about
having a gigantic bag of weed handed to me.
Okay, sure.
I mean, legally, I am allowed to have this bag of weed under the laws of the state of California's medical marijuana program.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you wanted your spot blown up as such.
That is such a 90s way of thinking about things.
I am such a
90s
person.
You can't say weed in a text message. The cops will know.
Use the word magazine.
Yeah. Be like, hey, I got some produce in.
I got some new produce.
Anybody want to look at some crops?
But you do. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Oh, well, there's Boars, Gore, and Swords, the Game of Thrones discussion podcast / general TV discussion podcast that I do with fellow comedian Red Scott. And then there's my own personal podcast, Give Me Fiction, which is selected stories from the Give Me Fiction monthly live show, which I produce at Lost Weekend Video.
Huh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And the Game of Thrones podcast has been out for a while.
Yes, it has been out since 2011.
Wow.
2012.
Nice. And that's a very popular one.
2011. Yes, it is very popular. We have had over 7 million downloads.
That's incredible.
I was making a fairly large amount of money from it for a time, but then that went away, which I was very upset about.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Get some crossovers? Maybe we'll get some crossovers.
You generally will.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe we'll get some crossovers.
Hernandez bump.
Hernandez bump. God, I wish that was true. if only.
That's not marijuana. That's a different drug.
Savory Hernandez bump.
Look, we don't want to do any Hernandez bumps.
It's too early.
I'm not going to make a Cuban joke yet, but Orny Adams would.
Please fucking stupid.
Oh, look
Adams.
What he did. Segway.
Let's get into Orny.
I can't believe
let's get
this
into it.
Dude. We are talking about the Comedian documentary entitled Comedian.
Yeah, yeah. No article.
Really? Is it just Comedian?
Yes, yeah, it is just Comedian.
What year? 2000?
This was 2002, which is weird because I don't know when they filmed it because it came out in 2002, but there's no mention of 9/11.
Oh, yeah. That's right. True.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this just doesn't feel like a post 9/11 project at all.
Yeah. No.
There's not one mournful shot of Ground Zero.
No.
Not much
one
angst.
Shot of the New York City skyline conspicuously missing two buildings.
But that is classic Seinfeld.
Yeah. Yeah. Not comment on current events.
Yeah. Well, and he likes everything kind of a little rosy, you know, in his life. But it is just a few years after the wrapping of Seinfeld, though. So it was 99.
I feel like it was filmed like 2000, early 2001.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, because the special, the I'm telling you for the last time special came out 99-2000, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says, like, so, you know, timeline general.
That was good special. Did you like that special?
I'm actually not a huge Seinfeld guy.
Gotcha.
I think Comedian is my favorite Seinfeld-related product.
Right.
Yeah. I was never really big on the show because it was syndicated on the same channel that The Simpsons was on in the afternoons, and I was like, what the f- we can swear on this podcast.
Yes.
Who the fuck are these white people, and why can't I watch The Simpsons right now? Yeah. I was so upset that The Simpsons wasn't a 2-hour long block.
Sure, of course.
That I was like, I'm not gonna watch this. I'm not gonna watch Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You did not grow up in the era where Mama's Family was in that slot.
No,
constant Mama's Family.
Okay, guys, what was your afternoon syndicated television schedule? Because I did get home from school. Immediately, Kids WB slash whatever the Batman the Animated Series related block was, into about an hour of me showering or doing whatever, then The Simpsons.
Okay.
And for a time, there were two different networks syndicating an hour of Simpsons back to back, so I could watch 2 hours of Simpsons every night.
See, that's good programming. I didn't have that when I was... I'm older than you are. I had reruns of Gilligan's Island, Brady Bunch, and then I think there was probably a Bob Newhart in there, and then like the Andy Griffith Show or something like that.
Oh, like 70s Newhart?
Newhart or the Newhart Show?
No, the Newhart. Newhart.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, the original one where he's a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was all like 60s, early 70s rerun stuff where I grew up in Michigan. So, and you know, this was the late 70s, early 80s, you know.
I want to hear more about afternoon showering.
Yeah, what?
Like a Florida thing?
Is that a thing?
What, take a shower in the afternoon?
Yeah, I've never done that.
What? You don't take a shower at like...
I'm a night shower.
5:30?
No, I'm like a night shower.
I was a child.
What? Okay.
My parents were like, hey, you have to take a shower. And I was like, all right, sure.
Okay. You're just like, sure, let's do this thing.
Yeah, like some cartoons, shower cartoons.
Cartoon shower cartoons. That's my life then. That's my life now.
I think my rotation, I maybe didn't have many friends, so I didn't watch.
That's understood for all of us right now. I think you can say that for anyone who's recording a podcast.
Yeah.
Okay,
our friends are on our podcast.
Exactly.
Well, Animaniacs.
Yeah,
Animaniacs, and I would buy the toys from the McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
You get the Happy Meal, get the toys. Might still have a Taz somewhere, crossover. DC Universe Taz crossover. Like, I had a Taz in a Flash outfit. Which makes sense, right? If you're going to tie up anyone with anyone.
Oh, I loved Taz when that Warner Brothers DC merger happened and all of a sudden you had fucking Bugs Bunny wearing a Superman outfit.
Yeah.
I was like, this is perfect.
This is
a combination of two of my great loves.
Yeah. Animaniacs for sure. Pinky and the Brain.
Mm-hmm. Pinky and the Brain. Yeah. Gargoyles, that came up recently.
Oh, I'm a big Gargoyles guy. That Keith David has one of the greatest, most beautiful voices in all of voices.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Brandy Posey's at the Lost Weekend tonight. She has a Gargoyles bit she did on her special. I'm just like, what? You just name drop Gargoyles. That's insane. And I think that's maybe, I'm a bit older, so I don't know how we overlapped on that, but it just is a thing that happened.
Yeah, that is
adult child.
But so you're particularly drawn to the comedian. You're a comedian.
I am a comedian, and I watched this special. God, I got Netflix, so it was like 2003, 2004, when I was at like the height of my not doing comedy, but still being a comedy nerd.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've seen this. There was a time when I watched that documentary, God, like every week for like 4 years straight.
Wow.
Yeah. I watched this documentary a lot.
Why? Well, what draw?
Just something about the depiction of the life and also the commentary track where Seinfeld and Colin Quinn just rip on Orny Adams the entire time, which you guys didn't watch.
Yeah.
That is part of the experience of the film.
I have to find... Usually when you download a movie, it doesn't come with director's commentary.
That's
why you got to rent it from Lost Weekend Video.
Exactly! Yeah. It all ties back together, guys. Save Lost Weekend. Yeah, the commentary track is amazing because there's the commentary track by the directing team that's just very dry and like, this is how we did this. This is this person. And then there's the Seinfeld-Colin Quinn track where they're just... Every time Orny Adams says anything, they just immediately negate it.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Like when he's like, Montreal is my make or break moment for my career. They're like, no, it's not.
Yeah. He's at Montreal again.
This year.
He's so
there.
That's how not a make or break.
He's there 2015, 13 years later. Yeah. He's back at Montreal. But
name slightly bigger on the text.
Yes, it is. Yes, he's got a little bigger name now. I just like... It felt like I remember watching it for the first time, A, and hating him so much, and then B, thinking, like, did they have to find a foil to make this interesting, this documentary interesting?
I think that having Orny Adams in there is good because Seinfeld, while he's, you know, neurotic, he's not that neurotic. He's generally calm and put together at all times. He's not very intense. He's not outwardly insane at all. And if you're just watching a 90-minute documentary about Seinfeld, it's like, okay, here's a rich guy having to work out his stuff. But there's no, like, weird manic energy. There's no, like, contrast of someone who's made it versus someone who is trying to make it in spite of his own personality. Like, with that, there's no real conflict because Seinfeld has already made it and he's already a multimillionaire.
Yeah, he's won the game.
Yeah.
Well, he just retired from the most successful sitcom ever when he made that documentary.
Yeah. And we cannot emphasize enough, so rich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So rich.
So like very rich.
The Seinfeld syndication deal is one of those syndication deals that is so insane and so profitable for all of the years it's operated that, like, it's the only reason Curb Your Enthusiasm exists.
Yeah.
Because Larry David can do whatever he wants because he has, like, $500 million.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, the pot's just getting bigger because...
Oh, the Hulu deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's going to be insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's they're making so much. I mean, syndication, they must make like $1 million a week or something on syndication.
It's insane, and that is why I think it's very important to get into TV as soon as possible because it's going to collapse.
Yes, amen.
Yeah.
We need that TV money, man.
Yeah,
I need TV money.
TV money's the last viable comedy money.
Yeah, that is true. Oh, my God, it's so sad.
Yeah. Oh, and it's going to disappear in like 5 years.
Yeah.
Right.
And then we'll all be getting that web series money.
Amazon money.
We're all going to go to that Amazon, be those Netflix originals.
Yeah.
Oh, I just got sad.
I know.
Hey, Kickstarter for everyone.
Kimmy Schmidt's great.
Yeah.
Grace and Frankie, not that good.
Don't know that one.
That's the new one, the Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda.
Oh, you watched it?
You watched it.
I watched the first two episodes. It's created by the person who co-created Friends and a home improvement writer. So it feels like a 90s kind of like insult tete-a-tete sitcom, but it's shot like transparent, but not as good.
Oh, jeez.
I feel like you're using 90s like it's an insult lately.
I look, I'm a 90s kid.
Right, right.
Guys.
Oh, you saw Sleater-Kinney the other day?
That was a fucking amazing
show.
This
is a sideline. We're now a Sleater-Kinney podcast.
Oh, God. But I can talk about Sleater-Kinney all night. First of all,
the opposite of Orny Adams.
Really are. Really are.
The anti-Orny Adams.
They absolutely are. They're a bunch of competent, not insane people excelling in their field.
Not pissing off Jerry Seinfeld.
Exactly. Barry Katz has nothing bad to say about Sleater-Kinney.
And a comedy success. One of them a comedy success.
Honestly, that is the craziest thing.
Yeah.
That being a Riot Girl was so hard and ultimately so unsuccessful that Carrie Brownstein had to become a sketch comedy star in order to become a viable Riot Girl again.
Right, for her band to get more. Well, they had notoriety.
Well,
they had a lot
of notoriety, but it was like now there's such a bigger following.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Portlandia fans come to that. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was fucking. There were so many people I hated at this show.
Where was it?
It was at the Masonic Center.
Wow.
And they tore out the seats from the bottom, so it was like dance floor. There were seats at the top, and I kept periodically looking back up to see the people in the top seats, and they were just sitting down and having a terrible time. It's like you have to be standing and dancing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to relate. Now that we did sidetrack into that, I was going to say when this movie came out, I was in the thick of my indie rock quote unquote career that I had. So even though I was also very interested in comedy, very comedy nerded, did not really have the wherewithal to put together an act, watch this thing, and I kind of related to Orny Adams in parallel as an analog to what was going on in the music world of being that same equivalent person in the music world. Like, all my friends are getting successful. All my friends are on Matador or Drag City. What is happening with Kill Rock Stars? My sister is on Kill Rock Stars. She doesn't even want to be in a band. What is happening? That was basically kind of, I was having a little bit, I think for a long time I was very much like an indie rock Orny Adams.
Oh, my friends are on Sub Pop.
Really? It was like that. It was like that. I mean, and it continues to be like that to this very day.
Yo, that exchange between Seinfeld and Norty Adams when he's like, what do I tell my parents? And Seinfeld's just like, what do you tell your parents? What are you talking about?
Yeah, that means so much more in a different way to me now than it did when I saw it.
Yeah, you cannot judge yourself by other people in life, but especially in entertainment.
Yeah,
that is quickest way to self-sabotage.
It's the death knell.
Who is the guy who comes in and gives him like the...
Barry Katz.
Barry Katz, who's a huge manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those... it's like Hossein, I believe, any of those like
Jay Moore.
90s alternative guys, plus a lot of the other... Yeah.
That is a weird moment in the movie where basically this other huge manager walks in the room... Where George Shapiro is and...
Drops a terrible roast joke.
Yeah. He basically eviscerates him in front of him and in front of Orny Adams and George Shapiro, who is also Seinfeld's manager, in a way where it's like, what did you make of that moment? Is he trying to be a dick? Is he trying to... He knows there's a camera running.
Yeah.
He's trying to actually like give him actually good advice.
He's trying to help
that
he's
not humble enough to understand.
Right.
But it is still like an embarrassing moment.
If you listen, I listen to Barry Katz's podcast, and he comes off like that in his podcast as well. I think when you're a manager for that long and you're that successful, you're used to giving people the straight shit, no matter if there's cameras rolling or not. Mm-hmm. Especially some guy who's talking to your friend George Shapiro, who should be listening to everything George Shapiro has to say. And he's interrupting him and he's countering him.
Oh, my God. When he says, I feel like I'm giving George Shapiro a gift.
Oh God. Yeah, that
I
moment.
Was like, yo, there's nothing you can give this man.
That's true. He has no humility about like getting even. He wants constant admiration and constant feedback. And he's just not really willing to accept even what Seinfeld's telling him.
No. A lot of people, there's so many entertainers and comedians in general and actors as well, but have blinders on that are just like, I've got to this point because of who I am, how I've done things with my own vision, and whatever someone else is going to tell me doesn't really affect me because it doesn't have anything to do with me because I didn't come up with it, you know, which is just the dumbest way to go about things.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like if Seinfeld actually wanted to somehow, he's not the right person to mentor. But I think a mentoring relationship would be interesting to view. I mean, Shapiro should be the mentor for all these people, I guess. But he doesn't really do that so much on screen.
That's a very fair point about Seinfeld. Because I don't think he's very much into the mentor or like community part of comedy, like outside his specific set of friends.
Right. Him and Chris Rock just hang out at a diner.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, he has the comedians and coffee getting, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's
comedians
fair, too.
Comedians and cars getting coffee.
But his generation is established or they never made it. Or his generation is guys that are still doing up.
Oh, God, yeah. Anybody who came up with Seinfeld is either a huge multimillionaire or fucking sweating it out in the clubs.
Right. Yeah. Like Colin Quinn is maybe a good example of someone who is known in certain circles, never is going to be as famous as Jerry.
Oh, no, but he's still completely
respected.
Great
established.
Career.
Yeah, great.
Better
career than Orny Adams.
Oh, like, absolutely.
You know, and so that's the thing. When he, oh, God, that was in that scene with Barry Katz where he's just like, where's Stephen Wright right now? I'm like, what are you talking? The most insane thing to say.
And that was the perfect, he won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody goes, where's he right? Academy Award.
Yeah.
That is the best possible reply.
Yeah, you can't trump that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Barry Katz is out of Boston, and all the people that he manages came out of that Boston scene, too. And most of those guys did really well. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all fucking gigantic.
Boston late 80s into the New York early 90s. The New York early 90s alternative scene was always one of those scenes that I was like, wish I'd been born into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the reasons, one of the reasons I moved to San Francisco is because I feel the same way about the 80s San Francisco scene.
Oh, Holy City Zoo.
Yeah, the Holy City Zoo and the other cafe and those places. Like when I was growing up and I was watching Showtime comedy specials and HBO comedy specials, all the people that I loved were all the San Francisco people, you know?
Yeah. It's been interesting because like I don't really have a lot of direct contact to any of those people, but that is like the era when I first started listening to comedy. It was like Alex Bennett Show, Live 105. It was like Greg Proops, Marin, Patton was here at the time. Yeah. Like people
Hossein,
like
Hossein Benson. Yeah, this
is Paula Poundstone. Even
people Dana Gould. Yeah, like, yeah.
People that people don't think about that much for, like David Feldman was huge.
Oh yeah,
that. And a couple other people that are like writers, but like there's knowing Ron Lynch has been an interesting sideline back into that. That guy has so much deep connections to the Boston scene in the 80s. You know, it was credited with giving Louis his main break, even though Louis just did an NPR thing and he doesn't mention that show. He mentions a different show. But and then he was in San Francisco in the 80s for that whole like comedy condo period of time. So it's interesting, like learning about some of that stuff, because a lot of that stuff's not as documented. That's the one issue. It's like not documented the same way that everything is documented now. So that's when 2002 was a weird time, though. I feel like it was not when okay, so who was this was in theaters? Comedian was in theaters.
Yeah.
And like I don't know quite what the target market was. I almost feel like it was a way to promote the fact that Jerry was doing new material for a new tour. And cuz it's produced by him and this guy Christian Charles, who also worked with him on all of his American Express commercials at the time. So this just feels like a big ad for Jerry Seinfeld, essentially. That's the kind of it's the kind of documentary that is like a celebrity puff piece kind of.
I feel like it's a very well-made celebrity puff piece. The on the commentary track, when they're not ripping on Orny Adams, they are very complimentary of how it looks, and it's very stylish. Yeah. It's very engaging. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of it doesn't go gritty New York.
No,
but the whole time you're like, this is definitely New York City and a New York City artifact.
It's also one of the few. I was going to use the same word. One of the few one of the few glimpses of behind the scenes stand up comedy that there is. There really isn't. What else? I mean,
pre-podcast era. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
there isn't one. Yeah, it was way before then. They're talking to Jim Norton, Greg Giraldo, Chris Rock, Colin Quinn,
Mario Joyner.
Yeah, the names Godfrey. The names that are involved in that documentary and they're still giants.
All men.
Yeah,
it is a man documentary.
It is a man documentary.
And honestly, we don't need to get into it, but
Cosby is in there.
Yeah. Oh, I skipped over that part. I was like, I don't even want to look at this motherfucker's face.
I still watched it because he does swear in it, which is one of the rare times you hear him actually swear. I'm just like, oh, well, I know you did much worse than swearing. So,
yeah.
That's not.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this was a decade before the or even more before all those allegations.
Some of those allegations came out.
Oh, well.
All those allegations had come out by then.
Yeah. You're right.
It was just Hannibal Buress that hadn't done a joke about them.
Yes, you're
right. I think, like, as also, like, early internet days, still 2002, a little bit early internet days.
Because it's pretty, I mean, it's pretty amazing when Chris Rock says to Jerry behind the scenes, like, I just came from Cosby. And he's like, how did he do? He's like, 2 hours, no break, sat in a stool, new jokes, didn't repeat himself. He's like, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, Jerry's just like, holy shit. Like, I got to go see this, you know.
And now people talk about Louis, like, in these same tones.
Reverent.
Like, new hour every year. Like, that is the new thing. Yeah, comedy nerddom has picked up immensely, like, so much more since this came out. So maybe this is, like, a very good document of, like, comedy nerddom. Or it's, like, almost like, just in terms of pre-podcast stuff, really.
There were very specific segments of the comedy nerd internet. There was the West Coast base of the Especial Thingers.
Right. That was started as a bulletin board, right?
Yes. It started as a Tenacious D easy board.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically became the genesis. That was like where all the recaps of like M-Bar stuff happened. That was where the genesis of Comedy Death Ray was. And then there was the East Coast comedy nerddom, which was Cringe Humor.
That was a website?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was basically all the like New York guys, like the Opie and Anthony crowd, the whole Tough crowd.
I remember cringe.
I don't remember any of that stuff.
Yeah. And yeah, those were the two major divisions. And you basically, I flitted between both.
Uh-huh. East Coast, West Coast rivalry.
It really was. Yeah. The Cringe Humor people were like, fuck those LA nerds.
Yeah.
And the Special Thing people were like, look at these East Coast scum.
Yeah. So, well, and your boys that did they would call up and do the pranks on the phone.
Prank anchors?
Yeah. Prank. Jerky Boys. There we go. The Jerky Boys. I mean, that's classic East Coast cringe humor kind of stuff.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So there's the beginning of the sort of alt club divide, do you think, started with that?
Yeah.
In the early internet days, yeah.
Yeah, that was where all of the younger people go. That was where all of the, like, alt-tier people went.
Pre-YouTube.
Yeah.
2002, pre-YouTube.
Back when people were uploading real player files.
Yeah. Or, like, now this is just getting to think about early internet. But, getting back to Seinfeld specifically, you were never a big Seinfeld fan.
I was never a big Seinfeld guy just because he never spoke to any subjects that were, like, interesting to me. Because all of this stuff is like minutia about adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm a teen.
Right.
When's he going to talk about comic books like Patton? Mm-hmm.
So you were aware of Patton in 2002?
Yeah! Oh, I was a huge collector of Patton material. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I downloaded all of his bootlegs. He had a huge range of bootlegs available. Yeah.
When did Comedians of Comedy come out? That
Comedians
tour?
Of Comedy was about 2005? No. Okay. Because I remember I saw Zach Galifianakis in 2005 and I was like, another comedian of comedy off of my scorecard.
Yeah. And you were high school then? Or you were still college right then?
I was in college and we don't need to get into it because it's an incredibly long, weird story.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard some of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have a senior year of high school because my high school closed because a nun was murdered there.
Whoa.
There's a book about it called Murder at Holy Cross. It's super fucked up. I haven't read the book.
Yeah. Wow, where was that at?
Holy Cross Academy in Miami.
Wow.
Yep.
So they canceled the entire senior year?
The school gradually hemorrhaged students, and it was already a very small school to begin with, so my graduating class was me and six other dudes.
What?
Yeah. Wow. And I just didn't have a senior year of high school. Went straight to college.
Yeah, straight to college.
Yeah. It was disastrous. Yeah. Wow. Awful. One of the worst things that ever happened to me.
Holy crap.
But yeah. In 2005, I was in Syracuse, and I got to see Zach Galifianakis, which was great, but the rest of my life was shit.
Yeah.
Did it make you want to be like, I'm going to go to the Purple Onion one day?
Yes! I'm going to do terrible bringer shows at the Purple Onion one day. God, that fucking legacy.
I was trying to explain that to someone.
What, the legacy of the Purple Onion having once been one of the preeminent comedy venues, then was gradually brought down by people doing mediocre bringer shows
right.
there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, someone asking me, like, is it still there? I'm like, well... There's,
in a way.
The building has something going on that's probably better. And then
way
there's
better.
People the with
name
the name.
Has been leased.
Like, yeah, like, I think I saw, when I was looking up something, randomly saw a video, it was just like the old Purple Onion sign on piece of plywood on a stage, like a couple around the corner.
Have you not been down there?
No, Kells?
Yeah.
I haven't been down there.
It's nice enough. I did one show there. I was like, this place is nice. I'm not really into comedy these days, so I was like, I'm not going to bother pursuing this.
Yeah.
But it wasn't bad. Yeah.
Paco, do you remember where you were when this came out? Did you see it in theaters or rental?
Yes, I did see it in the theater because I was a big documentary fan, and I've always liked Jerry Seinfeld. So, and I love behind the scenes comedy stuff. I love inside baseball comedy stuff. One of the things that pisses me off the most about comedy podcasts is when a comedian starts going, well, I take my book to the cafe in the mornings and I think about, and then they go, you know what? Let's skip that. That's too inside comedy. I'm like, no, that's what I want. Like, keep talking about it. That's what I want to hear. I love machinations. You know, I love the mechanics behind things. But yeah, I went and saw this at the theater. Yeah.
Was there anything else that really dug that deep into the behind the scenes life before this? I feel like there wasn't.
I don't.
Not in feature film.
Well, obviously the film Punchline starring Tom Hanks. Yeah,
with Barry Sobel.
Guys, right. Isn't it great how we all have lockers at the Punchline? That would be great, actually.
That would be great.
All filled with marijuana.
Yeah. No, there was no other behind the scene things. That's why this was so cool. And not only that, but it was Jerry getting his new five,
mm-hmm.
you know, going back and trying to get a new five. One of my favorite things, though, is he gets out his like Ferrari and keeps it idling in front of the Comedy Cellar in New York in the Lower East Side, where that street is about 6 feet wide.
Yeah.
He's just blocking traffic or something. Probably had someone to drive it around the block for a while.
He literally, in the commentary, there's a guy standing behind him, and he goes, oh, that's my driver.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In the scene when he's talking to Orny Adams, and there's just that guy standing behind Seinfeld trying to look cool,
uh-huh.
it's his driver.
Oh, wow.
And he's got a nanny, too, at Letterman. Yeah. He's got a, like, the
oh, no,
nanny.
That's his wife.
Well, there's, I
oh,
think
no,
there's
the,
also
I think there's
a nanny.
Also, yeah.
Yeah, there's extra. There's a lot of people.
He's got
a lot of entourage.
Yeah. Look, Seinfeld isn't wanting for staff.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can get helped out. So when you're watching this documentary, and you said you've seen it a ton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in it that you wish that they had covered or something that they didn't cover that you wish they had?
God, I wish that there had been any women in it in any significant roles at all.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, Seinfeld's never been one to champion diversity or inclusion.
And it's 2000. Not to say, like, there wasn't...
Look, women didn't exist back then.
Yeah, exactly. 2002. I wouldn't expect... I did look up this guy who directed this movie, Christian Charles, and he made what looks like to be a terrible feature film called Lovesick Love, which you should watch the trailer for you're like want to talk about misogyny. It's pretty insane. It's like a kind of a romantic movie that turns into a horror movie. It's like this seems and I don't know that he wrote it, but like I'm like, okay, this kind of fits in with what I'm vibing off this dude or off this series. But yeah, there's it's a good point. I mean, he had peers that were women. They did not get included at all. But I mean, he wasn't trying to do a survey at all. So it's weird that he just it's him and this random guy who has the same manager.
Yeah.
That's what it ends up being. And who doesn't by the end, you kind of like don't find out what happens to Orny. You're just like, "Oh, Jerry went on to continue to be successful forever." Yeah.
Oh, then, that's actually one of my favorite parts of the DVD. Is that they have a catching up with Orny Adams segment, and he's living in Los Angeles, and he could not look like more of an insane person.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
He's just still surrounded by his, like, all of his material, but he's, like, yelling about L.A. the entire time and how L.A. is fake.
Oh, wow.
The guy who loves to yell.
Yeah.
That's all we know about him. Yeah, no, he really is, like, what's interesting about the thing, though. I mean, Seinfeld's not particularly interesting.
I almost feel like it's more of a documentary about Orny Adams that has Seinfeld in it in a weird way, because he does have the most interesting scenes. Mm-hmm. Like
he's not likable, but you still are like, what's up with this guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
He provides conflict and intensity, which Seinfeld gives neither.
No.
Like, there's no stakes for Seinfeld.
Right, exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Like, he has nothing to lose, really. In any of this.
He has nothing to lose in his entire life.
Right.
Anything he does
out,
is at a level of no stakes whatsoever.
Well, even at Caroline's, one of the most prestigious comedy clubs in the world, he gets up on stage not even really having a five yet and gets huge applauses and laughs without even really having any jokes yet because he's Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Like, of course.
Pure credits. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to get away with it. But like. I don't know, just watching Orny go through the trials and tribulations of being on Letterman, getting that Letterman spot, you know, that was to me very interesting, you know, and seeing how nervous he was and like, you know,
psoriasis. I would get, if I had to say psoriasis on TV, I would probably not be happy because I have a lisp. So it just throw me off.
That I was legitimately like, when they were like, you have to change this right before you go on stage. I was like, whoa, that, okay. Yeah, that I do feel for him.
Yeah. My daughter has lupus. You can't use that. You know, like, why? Oh, you can't say cancer. I feel like now on Conan, you could say cancer or lupus.
Honestly,
it doesn't matter.
All of these weird artificial language restrictions are so dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, just.
It's Eddie Brill, right?
let a guy say fuck on the TV show if you just have to bleep it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like probably this is the whole Eddie Brill era of Letterman, right?
Oh, God. So no, he's they 2002? Fired him. That was definitely the prime of it.
Mm-hmm.
God.
And what are you suggesting that Eddie Brill had a...
He was very hands-on about editing people's material or just like narrowing down so that their set was totally rehearsed and like pre-screened by censors and stuff, right? And also, I think... gave like people feedback that didn't necessarily make sense is what I've heard.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a lot about him. I know there was this stuff that came out when he in the New York Times, what, 2-3 years ago was like, women weren't as funny as men. Like, so this is like the underlying topic of all of this is really, there's like the base level of like misogyny and showbiz is maybe the underlying of a lot of this stuff. Cause you have Cosby in here also, but, it is like Eddie Brill is not on screen or anything obviously, but there's a sort of like this, the invisible hand of NBC kind of like manipulating like that. That did suck to be like, I have to do a joke I've never told on national TV. It's my first time on Letterman.
And how did it go for him?
They didn't show. That was one other.
I really liked when they showed the green room shot of him on the TV.
Yeah.
I thought that shot was very nice.
I was thinking about that because they later show Seinfeld just doing his set on Letterman. They have the actual footage. I'm like, it was like a rights issue, or they like this idea of like these filters,
right?
You know, well, they had the rights to do his thing. I don't know why they wouldn't have the rights to.
It
do
seems
Orny's.
Pretty obvious. They played it so that he comes off as the foil most of the time, and you can manipulate images to kind of portray that for the audience, you know.
If it was you right now, they're like, we're going to make a documentary about Louis. We want to show a less successful comedian. In contrast, would you be the person?
Right.
Would you sign off on doing that?
Yes.
You would still?
Yes.
Just for the exposure?
Yes.
Because then people would be like, just talking about you. You get your material on there. He had jokes of his in the thing.
Yeah, they went to a bunch of clubs and showed him.
It's just him off screen.
If it was presented as less successful and an asshole, I might say no.
Right.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
But, so, I mean, there's no such thing as bad publicity, right? I mean, is that what we're learning from Orny?
God, he is a semi-successful comedian still.
He is still more successful than any of us.
Oh, he's still definitely more successful than the three of us.
Far and away.
We've never done Montreal.
230,000 Twitter followers.
Wow.
Only a very few amount of other comedians who do follow him.
Right.
So I feel like either it's one of those situations where he's completely disrespected in the community, mm-hmm. or he just bought a bunch of followers.
Oh, yeah, that could be too.
Yeah.
Now, tying back into the movie, like you were talking about like how Seinfeld feels a little removed from the community or what we perceive the community might be. Mm-hmm. None of us were involved in that New York community per se, but that is one thing that is... How important is, like, your peer respect, like, in terms of you personally as a comedian? Like, how do you feel about this, like, peer relationship? I feel like you posted something on Facebook that was kind of playing into this a little bit.
I mean, a little bit. It's more of my thinking was that it's such a fine line that you always have to be aware of what you're doing, what you're saying, to whom and what time as a comedian, especially in the entertainment, as an actor, as well as an artist in general, that if you're too nice, you're not respected. If you're too mean, people think you're just kind of a dick. You've got to like toe the line, you know. I am a huge believer in peer review. But I'm like Clinton. I want everyone to love me. I'm like Bill Clinton. I really feel like there are in the comedy world, there's people who like, I don't give a fuck and I want everyone to love me. I'm on the ladder. Like that's just how I'm made.
That's just how you as a person are.
Whatever
world you'd be involved in.
Absolutely. I think positive will always win out with negative, and you'll get much further by helping people out, which is why I posted that thing about the commercial or whatever.
Yeah.
Like you should just help people out, like, and hopefully they'll help you out, but you can't expect it. That's part of what my post was, is like, you should help people out, but you shouldn't expect them to help you out, because it's probably not going to happen, because people aren't made like that. Not a lot of people are, anyways.
I feel like it's important to gather a very close circle of selected peers around you to act as both friend and career and emotional support, but also to keep a nice distance from other people in your community. My therapist said something that I very much identified with, which is, you don't want to be at the bottom of the social scene, but you don't want to be at the top either.
Right.
You just want to kind of float there in the middle.
Ah,
yeah. Because at the bottom, you're scum.
Yeah.
And at the top, you have a lot of expectations and obligations you have to fulfill.
That is true.
Yeah.
So we've got Seinfeld, Orny.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mario Joyner, right
exactly.
in the middle.
Exactly. Right in the middle. We all want to be Mario Joyner.
Yeah. You want to open for Seinfeld. That's
everybody should try to
ride the private plane.
Yeah.
You should try to be Seinfeld, you don't want to be orny,
but hope,
and
for,
you should be satisfied with being Mario Joyner.
Yes,
you don't want to be the leader. You want to be the guy right behind the leader.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's. I've always thought the same thing. It's like, I don't want to be an A-list celebrity. I'd be happy with B.
That's why I thought it was so insane when Ordy was like, I want the celebrity. I want the fame. I want everybody in this restaurant to look at me and be like, that's Orny Adams.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is insane.
I was willing to, I think, I'm trying to think of the last interview he did. Didn't he do it? Did he do a Marin interview a little while ago?
At this point, I think everyone's done a Marin interview.
I feel like...
After the point where WTF hit like 500 episodes, it's like, who hasn't been interviewed by Mark Marin at some point?
Exactly. Well, it's just like, I was willing to say, like, he's a pretty young guy when that was shot.
29.
Pretty young still.
Yeah.
So, like, he may have turned on this persona a little bit more for the camera than he is in his day-to-day life. And he sounded, the last time I heard an interview with him, he sounded way calmer. He didn't sound like as insane and just like amped up as he does in that. But I was willing to cut him some slack. But when watching this again, it's been so long since I watched it. Watch it again. I'm like, he is saying insane things all the time.
Honestly, I feel like he might be coked up in a lot of it.
That would explain a lot.
Yeah. There are a lot of times when like he just has this glint of insanity and strain in his eyes.
But,
and he's just talking so crazily that I'm like, if this guy's doing rails in between sets.
The Hernandez bump.
If this guy's doing some Hernandez bumps in the bathroom.
But haven't you guys all met that one person that wants it so badly, it's like a worm eating out their brain? They're just, their eye on the prize of celebrity fame. Like, I've met those people where I'm just like, you need to relax.
I feel like the one good thing about San Francisco is they probably
no industry.
Anymore.
Yeah,
they probably left. People. They leave if they want that, they leave.
Yeah.
I was going to go to one incident that I remember when I watched this back in the day, when it first came out on home video. There's a scene
VHS
where
VHS and DVD.
Yeah, he was in a club. There's a female heckler. He's talking about dating or something, and then some woman yells, "Are you gay?" And then he gets really annoyed. And I think at the time I was like, "Oh, he's being weirdly homophobic in a way. Like, oh, why would she call me out like that?" But now, having been a comic for a while, I can see how a lot of it is just being annoyed at a heckler. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing where I think my perception of him was colored in this way of like, he seems real homophobic. I'm not just like, well, it is annoying to be heckled in general and not be able to come back from that. So I think I actually added a little bit of sympathy to that situation in particular. But then he also goes on and does like a Cuban joke and all these other jokes where I'm just like, well, these are... I even back in 2002, I knew these were not the kind of jokes that I particularly liked. Mm-hmm. So, but it did give me a bit, being in this for a little while, I could sort of see some of the inside of like, oh, I could see why that would be annoying to a comedian.
In the commentary track, when Orny is saying that the crowd in Montreal sucks.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Seinfeld and Quinn were like, yeah, a lot of people went after him for that just because they'd never heard a comedian say that a crowd sucked before.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk that way all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that there's a lot of things that like hadn't been really depicted before. Because when have you ever seen heckling on a recorded comedy anything?
Before the
onslaught of YouTube videos that were like comedian destroys heckler. You never saw any depictions of heckling,
right?
Yeah, so you know it's weird when it the one that I really identified with Seinfeld was when the lady like scores an easy point off of him early in the movie, where she's like, where he just kind of trails off and she's like, is this your first time doing stand-up? And I was like, this asshole scored an easy point off this dude for no reason. And I got angry about it.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because I've been in that position now.
Oh, I've seen you get angry.
Look, guys, I could be at a 10.
He's seeing therapist. It's fine.
I'm keeping it on the even keel for everybody.
That's funny. Yeah, there were some moments. I mean, that's what's nice is it wasn't all. I mean, you're saying it's kind of a Seinfeld puff piece, which it is a little bit, but at least they showed some some of the you know, some
struggles,
more, some struggles, yeah. A little bit of grit in there, because mm-hmm. I mean, as a comedian, that's how you test out your material in front of a live fucking audience. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. no other way to do it, and people just don't understand how fucking hard it is, even if you're
even
Jerry
if you're
Seinfeld.
On a jet.
Yep. Yeah.
If people are paying money to see you and they're expecting something, and then the first time he does the hour, he feels a little let down.
Yeah.
He feels like it's not as strong as he wants it to be. Mm-hmm. And then who's giving him and Leno in that room? That's a funny little interchange.
That's a great room.
That's a funny thing.
Yeah.
Who else is in that room with him? Shanling?
I think it's
Shanling and Leno.
It's Larry I was about to call him Larry Sanders.
Yeah.
Gary Shanling, Jay Leno, and Jerry Seinfeld.
Well,
and
apparently Gary Shanling is like the oracle of comedy. Like, he knows, like, apparently everyone trusts his writing so much, mm-hmm. and he knows so much about stand-up that people go to him a lot for advice. And I would love to sit down with Gary Shanling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Like, I remember that thing where, like, Apatow, like, interned for him or, like, wanted to, or, like, interviewed him when he was a kid or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Apatow kid interview series.
Yeah. The pre-what the fuck with Apatow, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's, like, obsessed with Gary Shanling. And that makes sense. Like, he's a pretty big figure.
The guy's a genius.
Yeah.
I mean,
he revolutionized television twice.
Yeah, he was one of the first, like, mainstream meta-comedy guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'd never seen a show about a show.
No.
Before, like, done well before Larry Sanders.
Well, even it's Gary Shanling's show. Like, that show was incredible. And that was a show about a sitcom, mm-hmm. in a sense. You
know, that's a Fox show, right? Yeah, he had before the HBO show, right? Yeah.
And Larry Sanders is still one of my all-time favorite TV shows.
One of the lines I've related to the most in my entire life is when Larry just goes, yeah, I don't have a I'm a bad interviewer because I don't have a natural curiosity about people. And I'm like, yes, that's what it is.
It's just so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. And like, Rip Torn and, like, I mean,
Tambor. God, Tambor is such a good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such an incredible show.
Do you feel like there's anything that you would give? Well, obviously, there's advice that people try to give Orny Adams. It doesn't stick. He doesn't really accept any of it.
And it's all good advice.
It's actually pretty good advice.
Literally, everyone tells him to relax and not talk as much shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you were doing stand-up in 2002.
No.
Okay. And so none of us were doing stand-up in 2002 this came out. So giving you this image of, like, what the behind-the-scenes world was like, it's really not... I don't think it's that much like that. I mean, the level that we're at, it's not like that.
No.
We're not hanging out with Chris Rock eating like eggs at 4 a.m.
I mean,
that's also the difference between the East Coast and West Coast comedy cultures, mm-hmm. where they do the hang out until 4 a.m. with your friends going from show to show to show to show, mm-hmm. lifestyle. And out here on the West Coast, it's like you do one show, you go home immediately afterwards. Fucking sometimes you talk to your friends, sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. No one has cars, so no one goes anywhere.
Right.
And, you know,
it's usually a burrito, not eggs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. A lot more late night burritos than anything.
So, like, did it make you want to do this or did it deter you?
I think in order to watch it, because we watched it like we did, for me, it was just on that path. Like, I wanted to do comedy. And when it came out, I was super excited again to see a behind the scenes, because we all struggle when you're first writing comedy. How do you do it? How do you write mm-hmm. comedy when
you're still struggling?
Yeah, we're all still struggling. Oh, it's like, how do you do it? And I remember just being like, I hope they show someone writing something, because mm-hmm. I want to see them do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was part of the path.
Mm-hmm.
I was always it was Richard Pryor Live on the Sunset Strip. I watched it when I was probably like 14, 15.
No, was that after your shower?
Yes.
Probably said that.
I took a nice afternoon shower. I don't know what it is with you dirty Californians. Fucking have to take a shower at midnight.
I'm also not like a morning shower guy.
Oh,
I'm
weird.
I'm more of a night shower.
Okay.
I grew up with night showers.
Interesting.
Right. Fair enough. We all shower at a different time of day. We all live in our own kind of way.
Jerry Brown might have a problem with all of it.
No. I can't take any more afternoon showers now. I have to do a nice...
Yeah.
But you're talking about Richard Pryor?
It was Richard Pryor Live on the Sunset Strip that I saw, and I was like, I want to be a comedian.
Yeah.
So basically everything in between me mm-hmm. seeing that and me becoming a comedian just contributed to it.
Yeah.
Like all of the internet board posts. God, I can't even begin to explain how much posting on a stupid internet message board contributed to my development.
Were you on a special thing?
I was on there since the easy board, son. Okay.
Whoa.
I'm an old school special thing poster. I think that I might be the comedian who's done the best with having the highest post count.
Okay.
Of all of the
special you mean because there's a bunch of people that were just posting and never going to
do
mics?
Yeah, there were a lot of people. There, like, Patton was on it, but he was already established.
Right.
By it. Of all of the special thingers who became comedians after mm-hmm. they were on the board, I think I might...
You've done well.
With the highest post counts.
Yeah.
I think I might be doing the best of them.
Okay.
Nice.
It's definitely a narrow field. See, Drew Spears. He's doing very well in the improv scene in Los Angeles.
There was an equivalent board for the punk scene that I was on in like 2000 that was Trouble Man Records. Mm-hmm. They had a message boards, man. That was like a terrible. But it was like mostly shit talk, like 80% mm-hmm. shit talk. It was amusing, but like you would get little nuggets of actual information and the rest of it would be shit talk.
Yeah.
So yeah, like before, this is sort of like a podcast type insight that we were getting in 2002 before YouTube, before podcasts were really a thing. So it is a little bit of a pulling back of the curtain from a huge star at the time.
Yeah. Well, I think it says a lot about the documentary that it was filmed so long ago and we're talking about it now. I mean, it could have just gone under the radar. You know, mm-hmm. it could have just kind of been swept away, but there's something very compelling about it because I actually watch it probably once a year, Comedian. I like to, like, once in a while, it'll be like a rainy Sunday. I'm like, I'm going to watch Comedian. There's something very compelling about that documentary. You know, on paper, it could have just been like, you know, it's all right. But it's something about Jerry and Ornery and their like, dynamic. And the dichotomy between the two that keeps it very compelling.
I feel very bad for when he just does Letterman and he's trying to call George Shapiro to vent. I'm like, I would not want to be George Shapiro.
No.
Like,
that call is insane.
Yes.
Yeah. When he's like, I don't know how I feel and I want to know what this is supposed to be. Did Jerry feel like this?
Yeah.
It's like, yo, dude.
Yeah.
Drink your champagne and relax.
Yeah. You were just on Letterman. Nobody gets that chance.
Yeah.
Very few and now he's retiring. That's always been my, like, what I've always tried to reach for is to be on Letterman.
Yeah.
Like that.
No one's going to be on Letterman now.
No.
Yeah. It's like all the people who were on The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Those people got a credit that no one else will ever have.
Funny. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I wonder who that is. That's a small group.
Oh,
year and a half.
The absolute first person was Al Madrigal.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And then they didn't actually have that many stand-ups on The Tonight Show with Conan.
Right now is when he's doing the most.
Conan
stand-up.
Is doing a lot of stand-ups.
More
he's
than anyone.
Really pulling in from the L.A. alternative scene lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that Orny could have... He seems like he needed a manager to do like a lot of like actual psychological counseling for him. He didn't... He needed the business side, but he needed more like therapy or something.
I think that... That is the perfect... Yeah. He just needs to go see a therapist.
Yeah.
He needs to talk to somebody for an hour each week and get all of that insane shit out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is definitely a person who just talks to himself in the mirror constantly. Mm-hmm. Like a fucking insane person.
I don't... I think it's in the documentary, but how did he get George as a manager?
They don't ever say. I feel like
that's how he ends up in the movie, probably, is something to do with that. No, there's a point where they're having a meeting. They have a meeting.
Yeah.
And then something weird happens. Like, George Shapiro walks in when he's talking about him to the camera.
Yes.
And he's kind of like, you can finish this without me. I'm just going to watch.
Oh, no.
They're watching the Knicks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's perfect when Orny's going on that long rant about, here's what I need to, and this is what we talked about. And you just see George Shapiro watching the game in the background. And he just goes, you know what? It's awkward for me to be back here. I'm just going to move back a little.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He's like, I feel like I'm giving him a gift. That line is just...
Oh. That is the one of the craziest things I've ever heard a person say.
Yeah.
That's someone's like, count your blessings. When I was watching that... Also, I was thinking to myself, I would rather be watching the Knicks with George, getting to know him, being a buddy with him, than doing that interview and discounting this famous comedy manager that probably was like Jackie Gleason's manager or something, you know.
That being said, I will reiterate, Orny Adams, Montreal again.
Yeah.
Us, living room, look, in San Francisco, making a podcast.
Absolutely.
So still, who is, you know, as much as we may denigrate this person, he got to a thing.
Well, I won't take away his successes at all. I mean, he's done what he's done, and that's amazing. It's just, you know, when you have those kind of moments, you're just like, dude, be a real person.
Did you find the prop work to be very alienating, even in 2002?
The stool and the
mic stand. Oh, my huge stool. When he brings out his shoe and just is showing like to the camera, I'm like, this is an insane person. When he's just like, oh, I found another way to do this prop. If there's not a stool at Letterman, I'll just take my shoe off. Put it on my head. Oh, the shoe you're walking around Manhattan in? You can put it up against your head?
This is when the Asian part of me. When he sits, lays down on the New York City sidewalk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, you need to get up. Yeah. That jacket needs to be burnt.
Now, he was a New York person, though, this whole time.
He's from Massachusetts. He's out of the Boston scene, which is probably how he kind of knows Barry, I get the feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, he's in the New York scene.
Honestly, I feel like if anybody had put cameras on me 13 years ago, I would have a pretty terrifying record of myself.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Me too. 2002, not a great year for me.
No. I don't think that was a great time for any of us.
Which is kind of crazy, too, because I remember in the trailer or something, some sort of blurb about it, they say this like struggling up-and-coming comedian Ornie Adams, but it's like struggling. He's got George Shapiro as a manager. Mm-hmm. He's got a Letterman appearance that he's about to do.
Doesn't seem to have a day job.
No, it doesn't seem like he's struggling. Like, that's not to me a struggling up and coming. Like, I feel like we're struggling up and coming.
Oh, we're struggling constantly.
Yes.
But also 2002, I think it's between comedy booms, essentially.
Yes.
So it's a weird time where, like,
that's an interesting
there were maybe
thought.
Less actual comics in New York City at that time than by now. There's probably like six times as many comics. Just in New York.
I feel like the boom these days, it's definitely more L.A.-based.
Right.
I think New York is having a good pure stand-up boom.
Right.
But they aren't getting as many projects out of it. I think the New York improv scene, all of the UCB stuff is fucking blowing up so hardcore because they built such a weird network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, like, you know, Broad City, Amy Poehler, back into UCB, that's all the New York part, and they're doing a lot of good stuff. But the New York scene just seems to be developing very well, but, like, you know, not huge things coming out yet.
Right. When will someone do a UCB documentary? That's got to be in the works.
That's got to happen at some point.
It's got to be in the works.
That's going to be a great story.
There's so many weird... It's like now, like, if someone does... we missed a National Lampoon documentary.
I was just about to say the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, but and just you look at these legacies and, like, who comes out of these things. UCB is producing so much stuff right now. But
there are some UCB oral histories up that are very interesting.
Right.
I think Vulture had them.
Vulture's been doing a lot of comedy journalism.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was going to say, like, also this idea, this is not directly related to this, but in a way, I was talking to someone else about this. This idea of, like, how is comedy journalism supposed to work? Because it's not like music journalism. It's not like theater journalism. And it ends up being kind of just, like, the kind of puff piece, like, you know,
it's
profile.
Or it's either puff piece or someone who is making barbed criticisms about stuff they don't even really know anything about.
Right.
One of the things I hate about stand-up journalist criticism is they focus on stuff that is kind of beyond usually the comedian's control.
Right.
And about and having this, like, getting really butthurt about subject matter that it's like, you know, after all, it's just a fucking joke.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other...
There's a Michael Che thing that just came out. I don't know what the origin of the joke was with Michael Che, but then he posted something on SNL. Then he put something on Instagram. It's just like, comedy is made by the people in the back of the classroom, but the people writing about it are like the people that are like the teacher's pets at the front of the classroom.
Wow, that's
just
really
an interesting
apt
analogy. So even if it's like, I think there's something to that, even whatever the subject matter is that they're actually talking about in the jokes. But yeah, I mean, a journalist is going to have a different angle. And this is not, comedian is not a piece of journalism. By
no,
any means.
God.
It is
no.
Completely like, it's not, it barely shows, if it shows a wart, it is like him doing mediocre at a show.
What is the worst thing that Seinfeld does in that entire movie? He's kind of slightly condescending and dismissive to Ornie Adams.
As the stand-in for the audience.
As everyone should be. There's that guy who tries to shake his hand a second time, and he goes, we already shook once, which I respect a lot.
Yeah. He bumps somebody, doesn't he?
Oh, he does, doesn't he? Yeah.
He bumps a comic or two at the Comedy Cellar or something.
Yeah,
but I feel like he might have even apologized for doing that.
Yeah, he doesn't come off.
He doesn't come off fucking crazy or weird or anything at all.
No.
Yeah.
He is maybe a little bit of, he's like, oh, I have a child who's a baby. That's maybe going to hinder me slightly from doing as much road work as I want to do. Mm-hmm. But he's not like a monster or anything.
I think actually when he was saying that, he was like, I can't do this and I don't want to go out on the road anymore because I have these things.
Yeah. He's becoming a family man. Mm-hmm. Very, very, he's just living in a different world than any of us. That's
We're
also, we
never
get a little
going
bit
to
that.
Make even a fraction of the amount of money he's made in this last month.
No.
I like that one part where he talks to the audience. I don't remember what show it is, what club it is. He's like, you think about becoming a stand-up? Well, this is it.
It's all shit. Yeah. That was a beautiful encapsulation. Yeah. I was not used to hearing him swear at all before the documentary. I think that's the first time you ever actually hear him swear.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because never swore on Seinfeld. No. Never swore in his act.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why, like, the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is kind of interesting, because he seems to let his guard down a bit, you know, and he does seem to have a weird interaction with the populace, like when people come up to him at restaurants and stuff, he's always like, do you mind if I eat my cake? You know, like,
yeah.
Oh my God, I love the scene when the opener is like, hey, can I take a photo with you?
Oh.
Well, after the show.
Yeah, that's right.
I kind of get that now.
Comedy etiquette, You wait until after the show, definitely. I don't even like to ask for a picture unless it's like a soup. Yeah. The one picture with a comedian I do have was Sarah Silverman, just because I was like, I don't know if I'll ever get this chance again.
Photoshop that shit. Yeah. I'm thinking about like being, and I understand there's this the thing where he's not watching the guy who's going before him at one of the shows. Mm-hmm. You just hear a little bit of like one joke that does not go over at all.
Oh, yeah. It's a very terrible
joke.
It's
a terrible
joke.
Oh, it was a rape joke. Yeah. But I kind of also now understand, because I always had I was on a show with someone who I think is great, like one of the best, and I'm like, oh, I'm going on maybe two people before she goes on, maybe she'll see me, and then I, you know, when I was done, walked into the hallway, she had her head, had eyes closed in a corner, just like muttering to herself. I'm like, I'm going to let her have that moment.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like, do you have any notes for me? I'm not going to do that like a crazy person, because that's like, oh, yeah, that's they're prepping themselves. If they happen to see you and like you, that's a whole other thing. But you don't expect that anymore when you're on a bill with someone.
Oh, you can never ask.
God, when I was in a band, it would be the thing of like the band would be like never seeing our band open for them.
Yeah.
And I get a little bit like butthurt about it. I'd be like, come on. Like, we're friends.
You
want to
be respected as a peer.
Yeah, exactly. That is that thing about the peer thing.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever not, I mean, let's maybe go around and just say, like, who is someone maybe you've worked with a comedian or seen at a show that you really desperately wanted to get a picture with but didn't ask?
Thurston Moore.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
you had a chance.
I talked to him, and it was like, he just kind of had this, like, yeah. Everyone wants to talk to me. It's fine. And not like a dick, but like I was like, it was clear like I was not contributing anything to his thing. I'm like, I'm sure you've ordered records from me online. Like, we've had some kind of weird email exchange, but that's fine. That's where that will be. Oh, that I want a picture with?
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
Someone that you're like, I love this person, but I'm just almost too scared to even.
I saw William H. Macy, but he was just eating dinner. And I'm just like, gonna like,
what, you know, and where?
In Albany at the Little Star in Albany. I'm like, what the fuck is William H. Macy doing in Albany with this sad ass walrus?
I'm talking about
face.
Like maybe you did a show with this person that you literally had a chance to that you didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. If we're talking music and comedy, it could be so many people. I'll bunt to you now.
Oh my God,
I'll rethink about this.
Every sketch fest, don't scare the celebrities. Don't scare the celebrities.
We had a creep zone.
Oh, I was about to say. I was about to say.
If you're listening, Lizzie,
Elizabeth, we're very sorry.
She did not. We were not anything to her.
Oh no, we hardly got noticed.
No.
Lizzie Kaplan at San Francisco Sketchfest 14?
Luminescent.
Beautiful. One of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my entire life.
In body and soul.
Yeah. Oh, just amazing. And there were other people getting photos with her.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. This is what I'm talking about. Rachel Blumenthal got a photo, but she was the driver circle. For
yeah.
her.
Oh, yeah.
So she already, you know. Yeah. Yeah. And the whole time I was like, she's right there. You could ask for a photo. No one will hate you for it.
This is what I'm talking about. Okay, yeah. And you didn't.
No, right, God, no. Yeah. I don't want her to ever meet me as a weird, love-starved fan. I want it to be like, hey, here's this cool peer that you can respect.
Yeah. And I don't know. What does she do? I don't know Lizzie.
Party Down. Masters
actress.
Of Sex.
Not a stand-up, an actress. So,
no, yeah. she's very funny.
Very good comedic actress.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And, you know, just that whole table. That table was like
Adam Scott. It was all the Party Down people.
It was
Ken Marino.
It was wow. Adam Scott, Lizzie Kaplan, Lake Bell, oh, June wow. Diane Raphael, Paul Scheer, Ken Marino, Erica Oyama, and I think Kate Micucci was at that table too.
Wow.
And I was like,
we could do a whole show about Sketchfest tables because I sat down once.
The Sketchfest social, the all the social shit happening at Sketchfest is the craziest, most hilarious shit.
All sub-Orty Adams. Yeah.
I sat down once with Dave Foley, Eugene Meerman, Bill Nye the Science Guy, and David Cross at a table once. And I just literally sat down.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to sit with you guys. And then they just kind of looked at me. But for me, I have a bunch of them. Weird Al is one of them.
Uh-huh.
I stood next to Weird Al for quite a while and just mumbled stuff to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have easily just been like, you mind if I get a picture? Because I love Weird Al Yankovic. Jake Johansson, I did a week with Jake at the Punchline. I was with him for a complete week, and he's always been one of my favorite comedians. Had plenty of chances to just ask him to take one stupid picture with me, and I could not do it. I could not get up the nerve to ask him.
Do you remember getting autographs from people when you were younger?
Oh my god, yes.
I have mine most embarrassing one probably. I was a big Juliana Hatfield fan.
Oh yeah. That makes sense.
That dates the story a lot. Got her to sign a tape.
Oh, nice. Wow. What tape?
Blake
Juliana
Babies
Hatfield
tape.
Tape.
No, Blake Babies. All right. Just look up the Blake Babies, guys. Podcast people, you're not above it. You're listening to a podcast.
Yes, exactly.
You can look up the Blake
Don't
Babies.
Don't judge us.
But, yeah, no, like, getting now I would never think to get an autograph from
anyone.
Oh, my
God. Could you even imagine?
Why?
Yeah. I have always been a celebrity whore, so yes, I did. I actually had a collection of autographs. Mm-hmm.
When you're a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The autograph racket is so crazy. I hung out with Sarah Silverman one time back in Miami, and after the show, there were literally people standing outside the gates of the venue with these, like, 100, like, headshots of her that they're like, can you just sign this? Like, literally a stack. And it's like, they're going to sell these on eBay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for like a buck or two or three.
And,
yeah.
And anybody who just had like one photo, she was like, yeah, sure, of course. But any of the 100, she was just like, no.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I got to do a show with Tom Kenny. They went out and had SquarePants, SpongeBob. Yeah. So we went out and had drinks, and these people followed us to the bar with like lithographs and all these like bags of stuff for him to sign. And he would do one or two, and then he'd be like, "That's going to be like $100 on eBay or something."
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's
crazy. It's all racket these days.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine like even. Like now being at the point of like, and this is also true in music. It's like, when you are peers, when you're even theoretically a peer with someone, like in theory, I'm a peer with Thurston Moore, even though purely in theory, like we're peers with Seinfeld. But, you know, it's just the idea of asking for an autograph. I can't even imagine like asking like a politician or anyone.
Have you guys ever signed an autograph, though? That's a pretty cool feeling.
I have.
It feels great.
It feels amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Anytime an audience member is like, "Can you sign this?" I'm like, "Who do you think I am?"
Yeah, like, but yes,
of course.
It's always felt like it's sarcastic when I do it.
Yeah.
I always feel like you, you're just going to burn this, aren't you?
Well, have you guys done comedy shows where people are like, you know, you might be standing next to the headliner and they're like, can I get a picture? And you move away.
And they're like, please come
they're
in.
Like, get it. And you're like, oh, really? Wait, really? Like, shouldn't I be holding the camera? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't I be the one taking the photo?
Yeah.
That's been my job sometimes on the road.
Oh, taking the photo.
Yeah, where I'm standing and they're like, can we get a picture? And they're like, hey, Paco, do you mind? I'm like, oh, yeah. God, all right.
There's that, I'm just going to reference another podcast. I probably shouldn't, but there's like a This American Life thing where it's the guy, Tate Donovan, is that his name? Some actor, and it's the same story. It's like he was on the OC. He's at like a theater and there's some kids and the guy's like, can I get a picture? And he's on a date. And so he thinks he wants a picture with the date.
Yeah.
And like he like kisses her on the cheek and stuff. And the kid's like, no, I meant, can you take our picture?
Yes. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, we should wrap this up, but I'd like to ask the same question I've asked everyone. Ivan, what is not the best, but one of your favorite documentary, one that you would recommend always, and or the documentary that got you into documentaries, what I call the gateway documentary?
Oh, my God. As far as the gateway documentary, I don't think that there's any one specific... Honestly, if we're going to go with one of the pure, less, you know, there was a Discovery Channel special about the making of Tremors.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
I would watch that.
Oh, no. There were these Discovery Channel specials in, like, the early 90s that were just, like, the how, like... the special effects are made for all of these like shitball horror movies.
Oh, wow.
Like the Sam Neill Mountains of Madness movie Mouth of Madness.
Okay.
It's a stupid Sam Neill movie that's kind of Lovecrafty, but not really. And it was like, hey, look at all of these weird monsters. And I was like, this is amazing. Look at those graboids. I hate that those were the names they put on the Tremors monsters afterwards.
Graboids, that's right. Yeah.
I was like, that is the worst generic brand name for a monster I've ever heard.
That's incredible.
You call them Tremors.
Yeah.
They're called Tremors.
I love Tremors. I never watched Tremors 2 all the way through.
Michael Gross
is a star of that one.
Yeah. Tremors is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like an insane thing to say.
Pretty much, yeah.
But I love that movie, and I'll watch it anytime.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in
years. It's just a fun, pure monster movie.
Yeah. So that documentary, though, was one of the your gateway.
That was
one
of the first ones that I was like, I like seeing how things are made.
Nice, yes.
Seeing how things are made is interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And as far as one that I'd recommend, God, I love...
Go ahead.
I love Jiro James of Sushi.
Oh, yeah.
There's this documentary about the Bocuse d'Or. It's this crazy French cooking competition. I forget the name. I think it's called Kings of Pastry or something.
Okay.
But it's this crazy documentary about the Bocuse d'Or, and it just shows these chefs practicing cooking and doing all this insane stuff, and a lot of times failing. A lot of guys spill things
because
it's these weird things where you have to make these incredibly elaborate like candy sculptures that are just huge, and like taste is hardly even a part of it. It's like the weird structural engineering that you have to know, and that's an amazing documentary. And I think it's called Kings of Pastry.
Would you say like cooking is your other passion outside of comedy?
I love cooking.
You're a big food guy.
Yesterday I made my own French bread. I made a bolognese sauce.
Oh, wow.
That was amazing. I made some chicken stock.
Lovely.
Right after this podcast ends, I'm going to go skim the fat off my chicken stock.
It's time to skim that fat, sir. Thanks so much, Ivan.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you guys for having me. You can find me online at Ivan_Hernandez on Twitter, ivanhernandez.net, givemefiction.net for my show, Give Me Fiction, first Sunday of every month at Lost Weekend Video, gmfshow.eventbrite.com.
Thank you, sir.
Podcast etiquette.
Yeah.
Podcast etiquette. You got to have your plugs ready.
Yeah.
We do shows with people with good hair.
Yes, it's true. Like, Ivan has good hair. You and I, not so much.
Not so much.
No. As it goes. But thanks. I'm George, and this is Paco. And you've been listening to the SupDoc podcast. Thank you so much. If you like the show, please review us in iTunes.
And in a shameless plug, my new comedy CD, Paco Romaine, Shaped Like a Thumb, is now available on iTunes.
And our website is supdocpodcast.com. Twitter is supdocpodcast.
Yeah, and the theme music was by David Siegel.